shiur was dedicated by Aaron Saperman with the dual purpose of Hoido ala Ovar and Tfila ala Osid for Chayamina Bas Yehudis. We'll start with the end of Parshas Vayetze. Very rare that people get to learn the end of a Parsha. The last two psukim of Parshas Vayetze, after Yaakov has his dramatic meeting with Lavan, the Lavan chases after him and wants to kill him, and he ends up and gets a nevuah from Hashem. Lavan gets a nevuah from Hashem, telling him, "Don't touch Yaakov." And they set up this monument as a testimony between them that they won't hurt each other, they won't pass over the border of this where this monument is. Then it says that Lavan got up early in the morning and he kissed his sons and his daughters and he went back home. Vayashav Lavan l'mkayim, he went back home. V'Yaakov halach l'darkoi, and Yaakov went on his path, on his way. V'yifgu uboi malachi elikim, and malachim of Hashem, the angels of Hashem, met him. V'yomer elikim kasher ra'am, and v'yomer Yaakov kasher ra'am, and Yaakov said when he saw them, machane elikim zeh, this is the camp of Hashem. V'yikra shem hamokim mahu machanoyim, and he called the name of that place machanoyim, which means two camps. Rashi says two camps, his camp and the Malachim's camp. Two camps, Machanayim. Very, very interesting two psukim, cryptic two psukim in the middle of the whole Seder of the Avos and the Parshas that happens. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and going back to Eretz Yisrael, and before he meets Esau, he's two psukim, and he met Malachim. He met Malachim, and he called it Machanayim. What's the message here? So Rashi says that the Malachim that met him were Malachim shel Eretz Yisrael. They were the Malachim of the land of Eretz Yisrael. Bo lekrasei, they came towards him, lelavoisei la'aretz, to escort him into Eretz Yisrael. Because he was in Chutz La'aretz, when he was by Lavan, he was outside Eretz Yisrael, and he was heading back to Eretz Yisrael, returning after Eretz Yisrael, after so many years of being out of Eretz Yisrael. So the angels of Eretz Yisrael came out of Eretz Yisrael to escort him into Eretz Yisrael. That's the honor that they gave Yaakov Avinu. And this is obviously a direct contrast to, and actually, really, it complements the story in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze of the Malachim that were going up and down the ladder. Everyone knows that Yaakov, in the beginning of the Parsha, Yaakov had a dream, and he saw a ladder, Sulam Mutzav Arzav Raisha Magia HaShemayim. He saw a ladder with the bottom, the feet on the ground, and the top of it in the Shemayim. V'hinei Malachi Elokim Olam V'yardabai, and he saw Malachim going up and down. And Rashi over there says the exact opposite, that the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael were leaving, and the Malachim of Chutz La'aretz were coming. So that matches beautifully. That when he was leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz, the angels of Eretz Yisrael left, and the angels of outside Eretz Yisrael, of the diaspora, came in, the Chutz La'aretz came in to greet him. And then when he was on his way back into Eretz Yisrael, the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael came out to greet him as the Malachim of Chutz La'aretz prepared to leave. That's the back and forth of Yaakov leaving Eretz Yisrael and coming back into Eretz Yisrael. There's two very, very difficult questions here. The first question is the Ramban's question. The Ramban asks, it's not really the appropriate time for the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael to come. He wasn't close to Eretz Yisrael yet. And the Ramban proves, based on Psukim that indicate where he was, that he wasn't near Eretz Yisrael. He still had a way to go before he got to Eretz Yisrael. So why the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael going miles and miles out into Chutz La'aretz to greet him? They should greet him on the border. That's the Ramban's question. Another question, we had this question, we were learning Chumash last year, we had this question, it's a very strong question. Rashi says in the beginning of the Parsha, a rule. And the rule is that Malachim of Eretz Yisrael do not go out of Eretz Yisrael. That's why he needed new Malachim to bring him into Chutz La'aretz. Malachim of Eretz Yisrael do not leave Eretz Yisrael. That's what Rashi says in the beginning of Parsha Vayetze. So if the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael do not leave Eretz Yisrael, so how are they able to leave Eretz Yisrael to escort Yaakov into Eretz Yisrael? They should have been waiting by the border, that I would understand. But Rashi says specifically in the beginning of the Parsha that the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael cannot leave Eretz Yisrael. So what gave them the right to leave over here? So when we were learning this last year, someone suggested following pshat. Someone suggested that we know obviously that when we say that Malachim are escorting somebody, it's a reflection on their madrigas, reflection on their holiness. right? The more achievements in serving Hashem a person has, the more it's possible that Malachim will want to be close to him. He attracts Kedusha. Certain people attract other things. Some people attract Kedusha. So he said like this. It all depends where you're heading. When Yaakov Avinu was leaving Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael is a much higher level than Chutz La'aretz. When Yaakov Avinu was leaving Eretz Yisrael, then the Malach of Eretz Yisrael can't come with him out of the Chutz La'aretz, because he's headed down. He's headed down. He's heading out of Eretz Yisrael. So then he doesn't have the aura. He doesn't have the Ruach of Eretz Yisrael with him, because he's headed in the opposite direction. So he doesn't contain with him. Eretz Yisrael is not on him now. He's headed out. The beauty of Eretz Yisrael, the Madrega of Eretz Yisrael, is not attached to him now, because he's on his way out. However, when Yaakov is on his way into Eretz Yisrael, even though he didn't get there yet, he has a long way to go, he didn't get to Eretz Yisrael yet. But where's his focus? Where's he headed? What's his goal? His goal is Eretz Yisrael, the end of the line. What's the ultimate goal? What's the end of the path? The end of the path is Eretz Yisrael. So even while he's in Chutz La'aretz, he already has the level. He already has the Madrega of being in Eretz Yisrael, so much so that the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael can be with him. Because he's an Eretz Yisrael dicker already. He's already shayach to Eretz Yisrael. Reminds me of what they say about Yom Kippur. They say it's an amazing the contrast. We come to Yom Kippur, we eat the whole day of Yom Kippur. We have a meal in the morning, a meal in the afternoon, we stuff ourselves up, we know we're going to fast for the next 26 hours, we drink and eat and eat. We come into Kolinger, we almost have to roll in. You know, we're full of gashmias. And we put on a kittel and a talus and we start Kol Nidre and we consider ourselves to be on the highest madrega in the world. And we're burping half the time. I'm saying we stuffed ourselves the whole area of Yom Kippur, you know, in fear of this tainus. But as soon as our Yom Kippur comes, we're wearing our kittel and our talus. We consider ourselves we're heading into, you know, Kol Nidre. We're on the highest levels. 24 hours later, we finish Ne'ilah, and then you would think, you know, we're really on the highest level. We fasted for 26 hours. We said five Shemoneh Esrei of Yom Kippur, Hashem Wa'alikim, Hashem Wa'alikim, and yet still, when we come time for Ma'ariv, we still say Slach Lanu. We still recognize that we have Chesed. We're not in such a high Madrega. What do you mean? Just a day ago, we were full of Gashmias, and we considered ourselves to be on the highest Madrega. A day later, after the whole Yom Kippur, we say Slach Lanu in recognition of the fact that we're far from being on a high Madrega. We have to ask Hashem. Even after the whole Yom Kippur, we ask Hashem for forgiveness. So I say, it all depends where you're headed. Before Yom Kippur, you might be packed with food, and you ate the whole day, but you're headed into Yom Kippur. So you already have the Yom Kippur spirit on you. After Ne'ilah, you may have had the most beautiful Yom Kippur, but you're headed to your meal after Yom Kippur. You're headed to indulge in gashmias. That's where you're headed. Well, that's where you're headed. Slach lanu avinu ki chatanu. You have to deal with your chesroinus. It all depends on where the focus, where are you headed? Part of the reason that this works, and it's a good muster, but it's a reality, is because Machshava Tova HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzarf L'Maisa. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that we have a good thought, a good intention, HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats it as if it already occurred. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it the chashivas of an action. That means if I intend on doing a mitzvah, it's not just that I have the intention of doing a mitzvah. In terms of the way Hashem looks at it, I already did the mitzvah. And if I already did the mitzvah, then I have all the kedusha as if I already did the mitzvah. So when Yaakov is heading towards Eretz Yisrael, he's not in Eretz Yisrael yet. But as far as Hashem looks at it, he already did the mitzvah of going back to Eretz Yisrael. He already did that mitzvah, he already has the kedusha of the Ben Eretz Yisrael. The Shem Yishmolel in Parashat Shemos talks about this concept. And he says, because of this concept, he says, "Ubezel limud la'adam." And from this, a tremendous lesson for a person. Lebal yizbahel, a person shouldn't be for a tumult, a person shouldn't be concerned. Leimar, and he will say like this, a person shouldn't say, Eich nuchel esay yetzahara. How could I possibly conquer the yetzahara? How's it shayach? Shehu har gavaya v'kasha, he's a tall, hard mountain. Ulahavkiya bein chayma yizbarzel, how can I penetrate the walls of iron? Hamoinim esadim lahasik shlemusa, that hold a person back to grow in Yiddishkeit. How can I penetrate? How can I penetrate the walls of iron? So he says, no. A person should realize that it all depends on the decision to do it. When a person makes that commitment, the person makes that decision that he's going to shteig, his path is going to lead up. He's heading towards Eretz Yisrael, whatever the Eretz Yisrael for that person is. His path is upwards. So that itself puts inside him the Kedusha, the holiness, and the spirit of someone who's already done that. And that gives him the power to overcome obstacles. So he says the difference between a person before he's made a commitment to grow and after he's made a commitment to grow is mamish unrecognizable. A person after he's made the commitment to grow has within him the glow, the motivation, the kedusha of someone who's already grown. Because machshava tayva HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzarfa l'maisa. So that's one shot how the Malachim Eretz Yisrael were able to come out and greet Yaakov, and a very, very important lesson that comes out from that shot. I want to suggest another shot. And with this, for the second shot, we're going to go into Parshas Vayishlach. So Parshas Vayishlach starts with Yaakov sending Malachim to Esav. He's afraid that Esav is going to attack him on his way back to Eretz Yisrael. And he sends Malachim to Esav, and he sends messages. He sends a lot of presents, a lot of shor, v'chamor, v'tzayin, v'eved, v'shivcha. He sends a lot of presents along. Along with the presents are messages that he sends. He sends a message to Esav, and the message has a dual purpose. Part of the message is to say, and this is a very intelligent of him, part of the message is to say, don't worry about it. I didn't accomplish that much. I don't have that. All the brachas that you're so jealous of me about, I didn't accomplish that much. I still don't have a place to live, he tells him. I'm not out to get you, you know, and so on. It's a with humility, he talks to Esav. But implied, there are implications in the message underneath the services, but don't push it. Because if you're going to start up with me, I am a very powerful man. Both of those messages come together. Mitzarecha, I'm going to be a nice guy now. He said, shady, but don't push it. You know, I warn you not to start up with me. So part of that is, and he says, he sends a message to Esav. Im Lavan Garti, I've lived with Lavan. So the surface level of that, Rashi says, is, I didn't settle down, I didn't buy a house, I don't have a place to live. Like, don't get carried away, don't be so jealous of me. I'm Lavan Garti, I live like a ger, I live like a stranger. That's the surface level. But then underneath that, the undercurrent of that is, Rashi says, Garti is gematria, the same letters of Taryag. Taryag is 613. So I want to tell you something. I kept all 613 mitzvahs. The Taryag mitzvahs shamarti. I kept all 613 mitzvahs. And even though I lived with Lavan, lo lamadati mimaisav haroim, I didn't learn from his bad actions. I didn't learn from Lavan. I kept all the mitzvahs, and I didn't learn from Lavan. So watch out for me. I'm on Hashem's good side right now. That's the Lavan Garti is the surface, and then the underneath, Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti V'Lo Lamadati Mimaisav Haroim. So two questions. Again, we know when we have Limudim like this from Sukkim, there's nothing that's coincidental, there's nothing that's, you know, like Hashem thought of like a cool way to put in a gematria. That doesn't work that way. Everything is premeditated, everything fits beautifully and reflects the essence of what's being discussed. Why is it that the way that Yaakov transmitted to Esav that he kept the Torah was with a gematria of the amount of mitzvahs? Who cares how many mitzvahs there are? That's not the point. The point is he did what Hashem said. The point is not how many mitzvahs there are. And I want to tell you something, 613. That's not the point. What was his message to Esav? And I kept 613 mitzvahs. What's the difference how many mitzvahs there are, and why do you transmit it in the form of the number of mitzvahs? Well, why is that the way you give it over? And secondly, isn't the fact that he kept 613 mitzvahs itself a good indication that he didn't learn from Lavan's bad ways? Why did Yaakov have to say, according to Rashi, Yaakov is saying, I kept 613 mitzvahs, and I didn't learn from his bad ways. Yeah, obviously. You kept saying, obviously you didn't learn from his bad ways. What's that addition there? What's the message there in that addition? So to understand that, as is often the case. You have to go back to the roots of what's going on over here. It says when Rivka had both Yaakov and Esav in her womb, when Rivka was going crazy, she had Yisraita to Abanam Bikirba, the sons, Yaakov and Esav, were fighting inside of her. She felt them fighting inside of her. She had tremendous pain from it. So Rashi over there, in the beginning of Parshas Tehillah, says, what were they fighting about? Rashi says they were fighting about who's going to inherit both worlds. That means that Yaakov wanted Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, and Esav wanted Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Yaakov wanted this world and the next, and Esav wanted this world and the next. Why did Yaakov want this world? Yaakov didn't realize that the main world is the next world? Why did Yaakov want this world? Yaakov should have said, this world I'm going to leave for Esav, and I'll take the next world. Why does Yaakov want this world? The answer is because Yaakov is here to accomplish the purpose of creation. And the purpose of creation is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a world called Shemayim, where the Kisei Yaakov is, where Hashem is, where the Malachim are. And Hashem made a much darker, more confusing world, which is this world. And the goal of creation is that this world should reflect the next world. That the values of this world, which they don't, the values of this world should reflect the values of the next world. That the gashmias of this world, all the physical things that exist in this world, should just serve Hashem. That even the Yetzirah, like we discussed a few weeks ago, the Yetzirah itself should just exist just to serve Hashem. That's the goal. Just giving away this world and just being in the next world, that's not accomplishing the goal. That's like, you know, some religions, they look at Avodas Hashem as divorcing yourself from any kind of physical whatsoever and just focusing on spiritual. That's not the purpose of the world. The purpose of the world is to bond together, that the physical and the spiritual should be able to work together, should be able to meld together into a perfect shlemus. Like a Shabbos Suda, where we sit and we eat Gashmias and we enjoy the Gashmias as we're involved in serving Hashem. It's all one big picture of serving Hashem. That's the purpose of the world. So Yaakov wanted Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba so he could accomplish the purpose of the world, which is to use Olam Hazeh properly so that it's a reflection of the values of the next world, so that it connects with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a beautiful song. I meant to bring it. I forgot to bring it. I meant to bring it with me. There's a beautiful song that I saw in Rabbi Fishman lent me last year, a sefer, about the Chiddushei Arim. And at the back of the sefer, it has a song that he composed. I don't know the tune for the song. It just has the words in Hebrew. And I mentioned it to a few big Talmid Chacham, and they hadn't heard of it. I think it's a find, this song. And the song has four parts to it. And it's very, very interesting. But the part that's nageya for this is, it has there what the Yetzirah tells a person, all in beautiful rhyme and complex Hebrew. It has what the Yetzirah, what does the evil inclination tell a person? It tells a person, don't worry about other people, just worry about yourself, and just make sure you're taken care of, and just make sure that you get all the Olam Hazeh that you could get, and run around, and there's so much fun to be had, and just travel, and see the world, and all the directives of the Yetzirah. And it says, then it has the reaction of the person hearing this directive. It has the person who's a fool, how he reacts to that, how he gets completely swallowed in and taken in. And it has the wise man, how he realizes that this whole, like different paragraphs in the song, it has the wise man, how he realizes this is all it's all a trick. And then it has Divrei HaYetzer El Atzmai. It has the Yetzihara talking to himself. What's the, it's an interesting thing to think about. When the Yetzihara is trying to convince me, get out of the base medrash, go enjoy yourself, what's he telling himself? What's he thinking? So we think that the Yetzirah is thinking, I gotta get this guy out of Beis Medrash. I don't want anyone to be Mekayim the Torah. I want everyone to just not listen to Hashem. That's what we think the Yetzirah is thinking. It's not true. The Kedush Yerim writes this beautiful song where he says the Yetzirah is also a creation of Hashem. The Yetzirah exists. What's the shlemus of the Yetzirah? When does the Yetzirah feel like he reached perfection? When we don't listen to him. The Yetzirah is in this world to tempt us away, and then we should not listen. And when we don't listen, when we conquer him, then the Yetzirah accomplished its tachlis. If we listen to him, then he didn't accomplish his tachlis. He exists to be the temptation that we don't listen to. If we fall in, that's not what he wants. So the Chiddush Rim has this whole song where the Yetzer Hara is saying, I hope he doesn't listen to me. I hope he's stubborn and he keeps away. Anyone who's smart will just not listen to a word I'm saying. But I just, what should I do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced me to try to tempt him away. And I wish I wouldn't have to do this, but that's my job in this world, to force a person away from Hashem. But if he cares about himself and if he cares about his future, he won't be tempted to turn away from Hashem and to follow me. That's what he's saying as he's pulling us away. Unbelievable. That's the shleimus of the Eitz Hara. That's the we have Olam Hazeh. They have this world. There's so much pulling in this world. There's physical pleasures. There's money. There's excitement. There's so much pulling in this world. But the whole purpose of it all is for us not to pay any attention to it. That's the purpose. The purpose is not to pay attention to. Because people say like about certain things in this world, I have to experience this one time. At least one time I have to experience going here or doing this. I have to experience it one time. Right? That's what. Maybe certain things exist so that we shouldn't experience it. That's why they exist. That's their shleimus. The proof of it all is, again, in this week's parasha, Yaakov gets into a fight with the Malach of Esav. So Yaakov has his fight with an angel, an unbelievable parasha, Vayayovek Ish Imai, and he fights him and fights him and fights him and fights him until the morning, and he wins. Yaakov wins. When he wins, so the Malach says, let me go. The morning star has risen. So Rashi says, so what? So it's the morning. Why does Yaakov have to let him go? So Rashi says that it was time for the Malach to say Shira. The Malach was saying, it's my turn to sing to Hashem. Let me go. It's my turn to sing to Hashem. So I once heard someone say, that is such a funny coincidence that as Yaakov is conquering the Malach, so I gotta go. I gotta say Shira now. Sorry, I didn't realize I had another appointment. I have to go sing to Hashem now. It's not what's going on. What's going on is, because Yaakov conquered him, because Yaakov flattened him, because Yaakov conquered the Malach of Esav, because of that, that's why it's time for him to say Shira. Because the angel of Esav exists to be conquered. It exists in order for Yaakov to conquer him. That's why he exists. The Yetzer Hara, the evil, the temptation, all the things that represent the Esavs of the world, the evil in the world, it exists to tempt me away and for me to conquer it. As soon as I conquer it, he says, oh, let me go. I have to go sing to Hashem. I reached my tachlis. The purpose of my existence, that's the greatest song to Hashem. I reached the purpose of my existence. And that's what Yaakov's job is. Yaakov is sleeping by the place of the Beis HaMikdash, and there are malachim going up and down. And Chazal said that the Malachim were amazed. They went up to the Kisei HaKavod, to Hashem's throne, Kaviyachol, and they saw the Tzura of Yaakov there, engraved on his throne. They saw like the face of Yaakov on the throne of the Kisei HaKavod. And then they went down and they saw that face lying on the ground in this world. And they went back up, it's the same face. And they came back down, it's the same face. They kept going up and coming down and looking at the same Tzura and Shemayim. They weren't confused. That's not what's going on over here. The whole point of here is to bring out the job of Yaakov, that the way things run in this world, the way you exist and the way you run your life in this world, should be a beautiful and complete reflection of the way things exist in Shemayim. The same values, the same holiness, the same dedication to Hashem. So the Malachim came down and they saw lying on the floor of this world a man that was the exact reflection of the man that Hashem has engraved on the Kisei HaKavod. That's a person who takes his existence in this world and makes it like a mirror image of the way of the value system of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. And that's Yaakov's message. That's Hashem's message to Yaakov. He goes to sleep as he's leaving Eretz Yisrael. And he's going into the world of Golos. He's going into exile. And he's going out to live with Lavan, with Arusha. And he has to make a parnas. He has to work with animals and so on. He has to get married and have children. And he has to get involved in things that might be a distraction from sitting and learning all day. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to have this picture in his head of the Malachim going up and down. Even as you go out into this world, and especially as you go out into this world, and you're involved in all the different things that exist in this world, make sure that your involvement in this world is a reflection of the values of the next world. Take this world and connect it to the next world. They should be able to fit together. That's why it's in a gematria of 613. If you think about it, in Olam Haba, or in the Beis Medrash even, in the Beis Medrash, it doesn't really matter how many mitzvahs there are. We can sit and learn a black Gemara, and in that Gemara we can discuss 5 mitzvahs, 10 mitzvahs, 20 mitzvahs, it doesn't matter. It's one Torah. In theory, all the different mitzvahs are not divided up into different mitzvahs. When you're in the learning of it, or in the theory of it, it's one Torah. When does it get divided up into specific mitzvahs? When I'm doing it. First I do this mitzvah, that's one mitzvah. Then I do a different mitzvah, that's another mitzvah. The mitzvahs are divided into specific numbers when they're translated into action, when I'm doing them. Action is in this world. In Olam Haba we can have a lot of understanding, we can have a lot of depth, a lot of limud. Right? In Shemayim they learn, there's a yeshiva Shemayim, there's learning in Shemayim. But action is in this world. This is the world of action, of actions. Olam HaMaisa, the world of action. Yaakov's message to Esav was, not just that I learned a lot of Torah, that I did what Hashem said. I did all 613 actions. Actions or non-actions, depending if they're positive or negative commandments. But, in other words, I brought the Torah into this world. I didn't just learn about the whole Torah. I didn't just have the whole Torah in theory. I actually did all the actions of the Torah in this world. I connected this world to the next world. That's why it's in a gematria. That's why it's in a count. When you say the mitzvahs in numbers, then it's only a question of I shook a lulav, that's one thing. I brought a carbon, that's a second thing. When you divide it up into actions, that's when you have to count how many mitzvahs there are. But there's another aspect of so this is one aspect. Doing mitzvahs is one aspect of connecting this world to the next world. I take a lulav, let's say a lulav and eser. I take a lulav as a branch. I put on hadassim and aroah as the two other kinds of branches. Now I have 3 branches and a fruit. It's 3 branches and a fruit. That's all it is. It's 3 branches and a fruit. When I take these 3 branches and a fruit and I use them for what Hashem said, suddenly these 3 branches and a fruit are not 3 branches and a fruit anymore. Suddenly they become objects of a mitzvah. Suddenly they have the kedusha of a mitzvah. You've taken something physical and you've elevated it. You've given it kedusha. When we take an animal and we put it on the mizbeach, we've taken an animal. An animal is such a low level. It's an animal. And we put it on the mizbeach, we've elevated it to kedusha. We've connected it to the next world. And anything that we do, when we take a delicious roast and we make a delicious roast and then we serve it on our yontif table, we've taken a piece of cow, there's nothing more gashmius than that, a piece of cow, and we've elevated it. Our table is also like a mizbeach. We've elevated it and we've made it holy. We've connected this world, a cow, there's nothing more this worldly than a cow. A piece of roast, you know, a chicken, a turkey, you know, there's nothing more gashmius than that. But when I put it on my Shabbos table, and when I use it as part of my serving Hashem, I've elevated and connected it to the next world. And that's Yaakov Avinu's job. The Yaakov Avinu of this world, matching the Yaakov Avinu of the next world. And that's what he's telling Esav. I used this world fully to serve Hashem. Taryag mitzvahs shamarti. I did 613 mitzvahs. All the actions, all the involvement in this world that 613 mitzvahs demands, I did. And I elevated that, and that way I elevated the whole Olam Hazeh. So you, Esav, are in second place over here. I managed to do Olam Haba, and I've also conquered you because I've used Olam Hazeh properly. Esav is the one who's trying to get us to use Olam Hazeh improperly. There's another level of using this world for the service of Hashem, and that's a much more difficult level. We've talked about this before. And that's in the whole broad spectrum of things that there's no specific mitzvahs for. For example, how I make money, or what I choose to eat. Well, assuming it's kosher, but what I choose to eat, or how much I eat, what I talk about, what I listen to, so on and so forth. A lot of things in life, these are things that are called divrei rishus. It's not a specific halacha in Shulchan Aruch one way or the other. In Shulchan Aruch it doesn't say how much to eat. It doesn't say what type of foods to eat. It says what type of foods you're not allowed to eat, but within the realm of foods that you're allowed to eat, it doesn't tell you what type of foods to eat. It doesn't tell you how to make your money. It doesn't tell you what type of things to get involved with. It doesn't say anything like that in Shulchan Aruch. To be able to take all the areas where it doesn't say anything in Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't say anything in Shulchan Aruch about those things, and to be able to elevate those things to be a reflection of what Hashem wants, that's even trickier. That's a lot trickier. To be able to take my business I want to make money. This is my business. I want to make money. So, it doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch I'm not allowed to make money. It doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch that I have to make money. It's something that I want to do. It's not in the good and it's not in the bad. It's tariff. I want to make money. What if I would take making money and I would make it a reflection of Hashem's Ratzon? I'm going to give tzedakah with that money. I'm going to support, you know, institutions with that money. I'm going to support a family with that money and make my family happy and healthy. I'm going to be a light to other people. I'm going to be a reflection to other people of how a person's supposed to act in business. So I'm going to meet Goyim, and Goyim are going to say, not like a lot of times you hear, Goyim are going to say, oh, there's nothing like working with a Jew, straight, to the point, doesn't cheat, doesn't, means what he says what he means. I'm going to be a person that's going to make Goyim say, there's nothing like working with a Jew. You know, they always tell the truth. That's the type of Yid I'm going to be in business. So then you've taken something, nothing, it doesn't say anything in Shulchan Aruch about it. It's not a mitzvah, it's not an aveira, and you made it like a carbon on the mizbeach. You made it like a avoda of Yom Kippur. You took a mundane thing, and you've made it shine with holiness, shine with kedusha, because you ran the mundane. It's a mundane. It has nothing to do with Hashem. And I took something mundane that has nothing to do with Hashem, and I attached it to Hashem. And that every action that I do while I'm doing this, while I'm involved in this business, and while I'm accomplishing this purpose, everything that I do is. I'm bringing up on the Mizbeach. I'm bringing closer to Hashem. I go shopping for something. I'm going shopping for apples. There's nothing, no mitzvah, there's no aveira. It's nothing, it's fire. My wife asked me to get something, I'm going to do it. But the way I act, the way I drive, the way I act to people, you know, behind the counter, the way I say hello and how are you and good morning, the way I don't cut in front of people in the store, the way I appreciate Hashem's matana as I'm buying the apples, I think I appreciate that Hashem gave me the money and the ability to buy apples, and I appreciate His bria. I could suddenly take this mundane thing of buying apples and it becomes a whole spiritual experience. I was Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, I appreciated Hashem, I made my wife happy, I increased my Shalom Bayis. Like, it's amazing, I could just take the most mundane things, I could just put them on the Mizbeach. That's what's called using Divrei Rishus for Kedusha. Using the mundane, using that for Kedusha. And that was part of Yaakov's goal, part of Yaakov's role, and part of Yaakov's accomplishment when he goes out to Lavan, is not just to do all the mitzvahs properly, but it's to raise his cows properly. It's to do his business properly. It's to marry and have children properly. It's to raise his children for the proper focus, for the proper purpose. A person could raise his children just indulging in himself. He wants to have children that will be happy and just, you know, without a focus of, I want to raise servants of Hashem. Or a person can have a focus when he's raising his children that these are not my children. These are Hashem's children. Hashem gave them to me to watch, to take care of. But they're Hashem's children. And I have to give back to Hashem servants of His. People who are going to serve Him properly. That's taking different rishos, having children, raising children, how you treat your children, and putting it on the Mizbeach. That was Yaakov Avinu's job when he went out to live. It wasn't just to do the mitzvahs properly and then everything else. You know, that's business. Don't talk to me about that. The whole spectrum of his life had to be put on the Mizbeach, had to be used l'shem Shemayim. There's a Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara in Brachas says that you're supposed to say, we know there's such a thing called Mamre Sedra, you're supposed to read the Parsha every week twice, and then you're supposed to read the Targum, the translation, the Aramaic, you're supposed to read once. So the Gemara says, Afilu Atoreis V'Divine, even Atoreis and Divine. What's Atoreis and Divine? Atoreis and Divine are two cities, Be'ever HaYarden, in the part of Eretz Yisrael. It's not part of Eretz Yisrael proper, it's on the other side of the Jordan, and it's the area that Reuven and Gad, when the Yidden were in the desert, Reuven and Gad, two and a half shratim, decided that they want this land. They liked it, it was good grazing and so on. They liked the land, so they decided they wanted to settle it, and they gave it the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't originally part of Eretz Yisrael, but it was given the holiness of Eretz Yisrael. And there are two cities, and two names of the two cities there, it's mentioned in the Torah, are Atoreis and Divine. So the Gemara is saying that. You might think that, Lamashal, you say Reuven, what's the Targum of Reuven? The Targum of Reuven is Reuven. So you might think you don't have to do two times and then the translation. The translation is the same as the word. Reuven, Reuven, Reuven. Twice Mikra and once Targum, it's all the same. Atares and Divine are the same thing. They're names of cities. The Hebrew is Atares V'Divine. The translation is Atares V'Divine. So do I also have to translate Atares V'Divine into Atares V'Divine? The Gemara says, yes, you do. So the question is, why does the Gemara pick Sfar? I think you ever heard of Atares V'Divine? Why does the Gemara say Afilu Ruvain V'Shemin? Wouldn't that be a little easier? Even Ruvain and Shemin, that everyone understands. The translation of Ruvain. What's the translation of Ruvain? Ruvain. Everyone understands. What do you pick two cities in Evra Yardin? Like, who remembers those psukim anyway? Tell me, Afilu Avram V'Yitzchak. I understand. So the Gemara says there's a tremendous depth this tremendous message that's being transmitted over here. Targum, Aramaic, is not Hebrew. It's not a holy language. It's a mundane language. It's a regular language. It's Aramaic. But since it's used as a translation of Torah, it's something mundane that became holy. It became holy because we use it for Kedusha. That's in language. Eivor HaYarden, this area of Eretz Yisrael, is also not holy. It's a mundane place. It's a regular place. It's the same thing like America or China. But it became holy because Jews settled it to be Eretz Yisrael. It's a place that was mundane and became holy. So the Gra says, I would have thought that the whole concept of doing Shnayim Rikav Yechad Targum, the whole concept of saying the translation in Targum, is to show how the mundane is also has to be used for holiness. But if I'm saying the name of two cities that are in a place that was mundane and became holy, so maybe I don't also have to say the Targum. So the Gemara says, no, you do have to. You do have to say the Targum. But we see from there an interesting thing. I know it's a little quick, but just we see from there an interesting concept that there are certain things that represent this concept of taking something mundane and making it holy, like the Targum on the side of the Chumash. We have the Chumash, that's holy. We have the Targum, that wasn't holy. It became holy. It was Niskadish. It was like my business when I do it properly. It's Chayil, I made it holy. And the same thing is true on the other side of the Yarden. It's not Eretz Yisrael. That area, that's not Eretz Yisrael. But when Yidden settled on it and gave it the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, it became Eretz Yisrael. That again represents this concept of taking something mundane and making it holy. An incredible thing. Yaakov Avinu finished all his years by Lavan. He did all these things. He raised a family. He did business, a tremendous amount of business. He came with servants and maidservants and everything. He was coming with his whole Olam Hazeh, everything that he accomplished. And he has this confrontation with Lavan, and one of the few times that you have Aramaic words in the Torah is that says that Lavan called this monument Yigar Sahadusa, which means a monument of testimony. In other words, there's a message there. The message is that the monument that was created when Yaakov Avinu finished his dealings with Lavan, when Yaakov finished his dealing with Lavan, was the monument had a Hebrew name and an Aramaic name. What did it have to have an Aramaic name for? And if it did, why did it have to be in the Torah? To show that Yaakov Avinu accomplished this concept of taking the mundane and making it holy. Taking Aramaic words and putting them into the Torah. There are Aramaic words in the Torah. Words that aren't Be'etzem Kaddish, and they became part of the Torah. Yigar Sa'adusa. This concept, that's what happened. Yaakov Avinu finished talking to Lavan. Yaakov Avinu finished his whole confrontation with Lavan, and this was the end of his job in Chutz Laaretz, the end of his job when he has to bring all this mundane close to Hashem. And he says, and he meets angels. Yaakov Avinu meets angels. Machane Elikim. And he calls this Machane Elikim, he calls it Machanayim. Now if you think about it, there's two ways to say plural camps. Machanayim is two camps, but really it should be Machanois are two camps. Is that right? Is that right? Machanois are two camps, or three camps, or ten camps. Machanois, camps. Machanayim is not just two camps, it's two camps of a set. I'll give you an example. We have a yad. Many hands are not called, each person has two hands. So one hand is called yad. Two hands is called yodayim. When you have that ayim in the end, it's a set of two. Or a foot. Everyone has 2 feet. One foot is called a regel. A set of 2 feet is called raglayim. 2 feet. When you're talking about an endless plural, then you just say machanois, camps. When you mean when there's a set, when there's a match, a shidduch, a match, so then you say machane, machanayim, two camps. Like yodayim, two hands. Raglayim, two feet. What are the two camps? So the Ramban wrote down the words of the Ramban. Loimar, this is to say, ki machanehu ba'aretz, that Yaakov's camp in this world, ki machane ha-malachim, is just like the camp of the angels, just like the camp in Shemayim. It's just like the way things are in Shemayim. Both of them are machane elokim. That's the Ramban says. You can look it up. He says a little bit more, but that's the gist of the Ramban. In other words, the Ramban is saying that as Yaakov Avinu was going into Eretz Yisrael and he's leaving Chutz Loretz, he meets a machane, a camp of malachim, and he calls the place two camps, my camp and that camp, which are both exactly the same. Very cryptic. What is that saying? That's saying exactly the point that we've been talking about. That's saying that Yaakov Avinu's camp, what's his camp? Him and his wife and his children and his cows and his servants. This whole structure, which is so physical, it's so physical. It's his life in this world. It's his business. It's his assets. What? It's physical. It's an exact reflection of the malachim, of the angels. That's because he succeeded in using his whole physical world just for the purpose of serving Hashem. Every cow that he was involved with was for the purpose of what does Hashem want? His wives were for the purpose of what does Hashem want? He raised his children to be servants of Hashem, so much so that he saw that his camp and the camp in Shemayim are reflections of each other. Machanayim. They fit together perfectly. Two camps. The physical camp and the spiritual camp fit together perfectly. Because the physical camp is a reflection of the spiritual camp. So getting back to our original question, Malachim of Eretz Yisrael came down at the Chutz Loretz to greet him. How are the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael able to come into Chutz Loretz and greet Yaakov? How are they able to do that? They're not allowed to come into Chutz Loretz. The Teretz is. Where was the Chutz Loretz? Where was Yaakov? He was in that place called Eiver HaYarden. If you look at the place where he was, Har HaGilad, Nachal Yabek, all these are things that were in Eiver HaYarden. He was in that place that one day was going to be a mundane place that gets the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. He was in Eiver HaYarden. That place, Atarei Svedivayin, that's where he was. So before he went to Chutz La'aretz, he hadn't yet accomplished sanctifying the mundane. So the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael couldn't go out with him. Because he hadn't yet accomplished this, that even the mundane, even the place that doesn't have Kedusha, has Kedusha. But after he went out of Eretz Yisrael, and he raised a family, and he was involved in business, and he got involved in all kinds of Olam Hazeh things, but he didn't just do them for the physical. He lifted them up for Kedusha, he used them to serve Hashem, so now that gave this concept, put this concept in this world, that the mundane could also have Kedusha. The mundane could have Kedusha also? Oh, then the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael could come out into Chutz La'aretz and greet him. Because the Chutz La'aretz, this Eiver HaYarden, also has Kedusha. That's why even though on the way out, the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael couldn't go out with him, but on the way in, they can come in and escort him out because he's accomplished his accomplishment of sanctifying the physical. And that's the addition. I did all 613 mitzvahs and I didn't learn from his bad ways. So he said, you did all 613 mitzvahs, of course you didn't learn from his bad ways. Nah, there's a lot more bad ways that you could learn even if you do all 613 mitzvahs. Because there's the way you operate a business, and there's the way you raise children, and there's the way you talk to friends, and there's the way you act in all the areas that aren't in Shulchan Aruch. There's a lot of things. There's a lot. When you go outside the Beis Medrash, you find out that there's a lot of things out there that are not in Shulchan Aruch. You have to have a sense of what Hashem wants. You have to have a sense of what the right thing is and what the right purpose is. And that's a tremendous accomplishment. That's what Yaakov was telling Esau. First of all, I did all the mitzvahs in this world. I used this world to do mitzvahs. That's first of all. So don't start up. And second of all, I didn't learn from Lavan's bad ways, even in the areas that have nothing to do with mitzvahs. Even in how I raise my cows. Even in how I talk to my children. Even in how I interact with other people. Even in all those areas that aren't in Shulchan Aruch, I also did the right thing. That was his message to Esau. So we have these two concepts, what we started with, that the place that a person is headed, he already has the madriga where he's headed, which is such a chizuk, that a person could make a commitment, a real commitment to grow, to change, to steig, and that the commitment itself gives him strength. That's first of all. And second of all, this beautiful chiddush about Yaakov Avinu coming back into Eretz Yisrael, that to keep in mind in every area of our life when we're not in the Beis Medrash. It's easy when we're in Beis Medrash. It's easy when we're sitting in front of a sefer, when we're having a shiur, when we're talking and learning. Then it's easy to serve Hashem. What's hard is to take the lessons that we learn and to actually apply them in the real world when it comes down to it. When it comes down to a deal or a partnership or something or a, you know, where you have to make a judgment call. What's correct? What's right? You have to make that judgment call. Am I being 100% honest? Am I saying 100% the truth? Am I acting 100% in the right way? And to remember even then that every move that I make, every movement of my fingers, every word that my mouth speaks, every action that I do, become elevated beyond belief, beyond our imagination, by doing them with the purpose of reflecting the will of Hashem. And we have this ability. It's an important thing to know. People think that there's two parts of their life. There's the part of their life of serving Hashem, and then there's the rest of their life where they have to get by in this world. They have to have a parnasa and a family and so on. And Yaakov Avinu teaches us that's not true. The entirety of our life is supposed to be the service of Hashem. There's no secret. We're not supposed to feel like there's two parts. There's a famous letter. I'm sorry if I'll take another minute. There's a famous letter that someone wrote to Rav Huttner when he was leaving yeshiva to go out to work. And he wrote to Rav Huttner that he feels like he leads a double life. He has his yeshiva life, then he has his work life, and he feels like it's a double life. And Rav Huttner wrote him back that you're making a big mistake. When you go out into the world, you're not supposed to feel like you have a double life, you're supposed to feel like you have a broad life. Your life, you're serving Hashem now, has a lot more areas that you have to serve Him in. Before, when you were in yeshiva, you just had to serve Him in a Beis Medrash. Now your life broadened. Now you have to serve Him when you travel overseas. Now you have to serve Him when you deal with Goyim. Now you have to serve Him when you're out in the streets and people are watching you. And the way that you act, and the way that you handle yourself, and the way that you speak, and the way that you... And the types of jokes that you make, and the morals and the lessons that come out from you. And every guy and every person who's not so close to a yeshiva is watching those people that are close to a yeshiva, is watching how we act and learning from it and gaining from it. And it's much, much more than we realize. And it's affecting them much, much more than we realize. And we have a tremendous job. We don't have a job. I just have to make money. That's like, I'm not doing anything important. I just have to make money. No, every single year, wherever walk of life he's in, is a Kohen Gadol. He's doing the full service of Hashem.